Hey, welcome to the Total Bitcoin Podcast Show. I'm really excited and looking forward for my next educational talk, or on the focused on security and hardware wallets, Bitcoin only hardware wallets, and that is Bitbox02. So I'm really looking forward to have my next talk with Douglas Backholm, the CEO of Shift Crypto, in the companies in Switzerland. He's the co-founder and CEO. And so check them out, and gonna put those in the show notes, and you can also find them on Twitter and on the website at shiftcrypto.ch. And yeah, and it's about facilitating the decision-making process on how to making trade-offs or deciding what is most com not only most comfortable for you, but how do you feel more secure and more and relaxed, handling operating a hardware wallet. So there's a lot of questions, and since we are, most of us are not security experts, and I had, after talking to Stepan Snigarev, thanks to him, I also got a list of questions, not only for my former guest, Lixin Liu, the creator of the air-gapped hardware wallet, Cobalt, but now we're looking forward to talking to Douglas Backholm, the CEO of Shift Crypto. And yeah, please like it, retweet it, share it with other people. Thank you so much again for support and for listening. Make sure you follow me and subscribe on Twitter, YouTube, podcast platforms, what have you. So without further ado, to my talk with Douglas Backholm. Yeah. All right. Welcome to the show, Douglas
Thank
Backholm.
you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your time. And yeah, Douglas. I've been, to be honest with you, I've been using, testing and using Bitbox, the Bitcoin only hardware wallet, Bitbox02, for quite some time. But before, we go into all these details, why don't you introduce yourself to my listeners and our viewers? But what I'm real curious, like, how did you land in that position? What's your path to Bitcoin? What is Bitcoin for you? Yeah, just a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, very happy to be here. Happy to have a conversation with you. So yeah, my past. I have quite I'd say mixed past, diverse past. I first heard about Bitcoin in the summer of 2013, and it was actually I was in Japan at the time, in Tokyo, and it was on the front page of a newspaper in Japan. And I was like, this is really strange. Why, like a well-respected main newspaper in Japan. I'm like wondering why do they have monopoly money as a on the front page topic. So then I got curious, and I started researching it, and yeah, it clicked for me pretty quickly, like the importance of it. I come from a scientific background, and so I guess the more of the academic, the research aspects interested me more, in particular solving the business problem. So basically have be able to trust something online that you don't have to trust the counterparties for. And that to me was really special. I was like, wow, okay, there's something here. I didn't know exactly what was there yet, but I knew that something special was there. And that was kind of the entrance of the rabbit hole for me. And it's been, I guess, downhill, deeper and deeper ever since. And so, in the past, though, yeah, I came from an academic background. So actually, before getting into Bitcoin, I was a neuroscientist. So I have a
Oh,
PhD in
really? That's
neuroscience. Yeah,
fascinating.
so I studied the brain.
So it
And
comes with precision. The precision part, I think, is then maybe.
yeah, so I would say, yeah, people ask me all the time, what's the link? What's the link? I can't really say there is a link, other than I guess I've always been attracted to things that I think can change the world. And so the brain is a really unknown field. A lot to learn. I think that obviously can change the world. And I think Bitcoin, in addition, is something that will change the world in profound ways. And so it's fun to be a part of each of these. And so I'd say, why did I switch into Bitcoin? I guess at the time, the next step in my career, my academic career, would be looking for a professor position. And yeah, I wasn't sure exactly if I wanted to do that or not. And I was thinking, okay, what should I do? What should I do? This other Bitcoin field looks kind of interesting. And I figured, if I'm a professor, it's kind of similar to a startup also, where you have to convince someone you have a good idea, convince them to give you money, the government in this case with grants, for example, convince other people to join your team to work on it, and so on and so on. But then in the end, the reward is a bit different. So if you have a startup and you do successful, it's a bit of a different situation than academic, and so on. And so then I decided, okay, how could I get into the field? Just decided to start a company and give myself a job. I figured I didn't think anyone was going to give a neuroscientist a job in there, so might as well try to do it myself.
That's a glorious story. Okay. Because when you said neurology, and I was thinking about this interview when Elon Musk, I don't want to go into any other tangent now, because it would just overwhelm people probably. But I was thinking of this interview where Elon Musk was talking to Joe Rogan about Neuralink. I'm like, I was going to ask, like, do you think it's going to be a time when we don't need any kind of hardware devices or hardware wallets? We just Neuralink ourselves to the Bitcoin network?
Yeah, so I'm happy to go down these tangents. I'll try to keep it brief. So yeah, my neuroscience studies was actually trying to investigate how individual neuron cells can talk to each other, how that can lead to learning and memory. What are the rules they use to do that? And so neural interfaces is a related topic to that. But I think, people coming from more of the AI side or the computational side, they really underestimate what's actually going on in the brain. It's a lot. And so, like, even in one neuron, you have so many subcellular processes happening that it's more immense than any computer in existence. And so, and what I learned from the brain is that basically any type of physical phenomenon that exists and that's accessible to the neurons, they're going to use it for computation. And so, there's, I would say, an overall underappreciation for the complexity in the brain. And I would say you can get some interfaces, but it's going to be far down the road and potentially not possible.
All right.
So quick tangent.
Yeah, I'd love to do to have like a separate discussion with you on that, but maybe some other time whenever you're free. So Douglas, so what interests me, when you and your team went into the development of the hardware wallet Bitbox, it's just called Bitbox 02, what was it like? Did you have a look at other hard wallets? Did you look at like cryptography, like secure elements issues? What was your approach there to?
Yeah. So this touches into a bit of my background also. So when I first got into Bitcoin, maybe like most people, the first thing I tried to do is see what trading is all about. Coming from a scientist background, try to make some algorithms to do machine learning and trading and things like that. I quickly realized that's a full-time job if you actually want to make money. And so then the next step was, after getting some Bitcoins, it took me about a week until I actually felt comfortable holding it, because I kind of had a bit of a grasp of the security concepts around it. And so at the time, the concept of hardware wallets existed, but there was nothing on the market. So Trezor and Ledger were, making some posts, making some noise, but nothing was available. Also at the time, if you recall, there was a big, I don't know what the right word is, boost in like mining equipment. A lot of people trying to sell miners and stuff like that, and there's a bit of hardware scams around with that, selling miners that actually didn't exist, or selling miners that the miners first used themselves and only sold after it's no longer profitable. And so there's a lot of scams going around. I didn't know if the other hardware wallets would actually come to market. And so I just decided in my spare time, in the evenings, to build my own. And sure, I looked at what Ledger was doing, what Trezor was doing at the time. And this led to the Bitbox 01, which I invented. And that actually came to market in 2016. And when looking at that, so Trezor and Ledger were the main sources, and I decided for a security concept, try to take the best of both worlds. So I have respect for what both the companies are doing. And I thought, okay, if I can maybe try to do something that improves on it, let's try to do that. So this is where this dual chip architecture concept came from. And what one thing that and that persists now with the Bitbox O2, we try to improve it a lot. And so I try to take the best of both worlds. So Ledger, of course, has a secure element. They have the code on there, but it's closed source, which for a variety of reasons is not so optimal. You know, Bitcoin's all about transparency. If you have closed source, you can't really verify. You know, the common saying, don't trust, verify, is a bit harder to apply. That's on one end, but on the other hand, the secure element does give you a lot of physical security protection, which is attractive. Trezor, they had a general purpose microcontroller. They did that in order to keep all of the code open source. But general purpose microcontrollers just aren't designed for physical security. And there's some issues with that. And so I decided, why not just take a secure element and a general purpose microcontroller and combine them so I can run the code all open source on the general purpose microcontroller, have transparency there, and then use the secure element not for running the crypto code itself, but just for trying to protect access, so hardening access into the device. Yeah. So that was the original concept. And then, of course, just starting out, there's a lot of improvements, a lot of deficiencies that we've fixed as we've gone along. And then the Bitbox O2 is really born out of a lot of the things we learned in the past, a lot of the lessons learned and the hardening that we learned, and try to make it a really solid product.
Yeah, great. So Douglas, I mean, you know, the reason I also do this podcast is because I really empathize with the average user out there. So, yeah. I mean, we got to be honest. I mean, every hardware device, hardware wallet has some kind of potential, at least, vulnerability. Mm-hmm. So when I first, got sent one of these Bitbox 02, I unpacked it. The first thing I was impressed with is the was it like the vacuum packed package, like right? So is that the sort of the equivalent of a tamper proof validation that, you know, it's an original device, you know, hasn't been manipulated, tampered with? So and since I'm not a security expert, I talked to Stepan Snegirev, and he said actually there were a list of vulnerabilities, you know, all kinds of hardware devices, but Bitbox or Shift Crypto Security, your company, actually resolved, according to his knowledge, all of them. So that's great. Are there any issues where, or let's just go step by step, like, do you want to start like with the tamper-proof packaging or the validation of whether it's genuine or not?
Yeah, so great question. Empathizing with, the everyday user, of course, also besides security, there's usability. And so that's one of the things we really try to focus on, try to distinguish ourselves there, make it easy to use. But as far as security, you know, we don't want to lay any, I'm trying to think of a, I'm forgetting the saying, but anyways, we don't want to leave any stone unturned. Is that the right saying? Anyway, we want to, cover our bases there as well as we can, of course. And so the vacuum packaging, it does add some, it is what I guess the industry would call tamper-proof packaging. So we have a bit of a unique design around the edge, so you should be able to identify it opens and things like that. But I would say in general, that's probably a bit more security theater than actual security, because it's pretty easy to just remake one of these devices or one of these vacuum bags. And so in that sense, it should give like a low level indication if anyone did tamper with it, such as the post office opening the device or resellers, things like that. But it's not going to give full guarantee. And so instead of that, we have, and similar to Ledger, something we were inspired by Ledger about, we have an attestation key on the device itself. And so what that means is during factory installation, we program a secret key onto the device. And this is designed for preventing counterfeiting. And so when you plug it into your computer and you run an R mobile app, it'll do a challenge response. So just to test if the key that's in the device is actually what it should be. And this is a bit a much better way to handle supply chain risks and counterfeiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Do you are there any issues that you really had to deal with, like cryptography, or do you have like cryptography team that is specialized, or did you have any kind of issues with that?
Yeah, sure. So cryptography is, of course, immensely powerful. I'd say it's quite awe-inspiring from when I first got in the field. We do have and had some cryptographic experts who've studied and things like that. But I would say a couple points here. One is that Bitcoin is more so applied cryptography. And so you're using cryptography that experts and academics have developed. And one of the sayings in cryptography is don't roll your own. So don't invent your own cryptography, because there's a lot of ways to go wrong with that. And so in general, you should use very well vetted, well used, well reviewed cryptographic libraries. So like the Bitcoin SECP256K1 library, for example, the Bitcoin curve. That curve has found, in my opinion, it's probably the most secure cryptographic library available. It's very, very well vetted. If someone can break into it, you know, there's a huge honeypot of hundreds of billions in value. And that's even found by analyzing that code and comparing it to existing like OpenSSH and other very common cryptographic libraries, they found bugs in those libraries too. And so that's one aspect, don't roll your own. So you don't really have to be, you don't really need like academic level cryptographers to use, to make tools that use Bitcoin. You know, there's a lot of core devs that are behind that and, you know, making the right decisions. And so we use the tools that they recommend for sure. That said, of course, it's important to have knowledge on the team, and we do, in order to try to pay attention to a lot of the common pitfalls that are available. And and like that.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, I mean, if you were talking to a noob, you know, and a fresh Bitcoin user, and you wanted to, you know, to make some, you know, weighing off trade-offs, which kind of hard wallet, I mean, I'm not saying like, you know, what would you be a pitch, but how would you compare that? Like, what would you explain to that noob? Like, what is so special about the Bitbox 02?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, first of all, assuming that, they understand the importance of hardware wallets in general, as opposed to keeping it on exchanges or on your phone. Big issues there. Then, sure, there's a few hardware wallets out there. What makes us unique is a great question. So, we think that we have quite strong advantages in the two main areas of usability, but also in terms of security. And probably if you talk to any hardware wallet vendor, they'll think that they have the best security model, as we do. We think that. We also try to be quite open about it. So if you go to our website, you can see a section on threat models. So what's in scope, what's out of scope. I think it'd be really great if other hardware wallet vendors would also have sharing the screen. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sharing the screen just in the background. Yeah. So that's...
Yeah, if you go to Bitbox 02,
mm-hmm.
and then there'll be security features and threat model.
Oh.
If you scroll up, there's actually a sub menu.
Oh, yeah. Over here.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just just a highlight of the security features that we have and the threat model. And we just recently also came out with a blog post, I think just a day or two ago, that also tries to explain in common language what our security concept is. And so I'm happy to go into details about both of those, but that's kind of some information that people can check out. Since we're on the security topic, yeah, so you can scroll through there, you can see different types of scenarios. I think this is also quite educational for new users, just to understand what different types of threats exist right. in the field. And so, you know, Bitcoin, it's great in the sense that you can be your own bank. That's super powerful. You know, one thing we're really passionate about is equipping individuals so that they can participate, so that they can have financial independence, financial sovereignty. And hardware wallets, I think, are a way in that direction. But the trade-off there is that if you're your own bank, then, you know, banks have security, right? So you have to be your own security team also. And I think this is where hardware wallets are very important. They take a lot of this burden for you and try to do it really well. So with our security model, I mentioned before the dual chip approach compared to Ledger and Trezor. I would say one thing that I think that we're proud of a bit is the concept beyond that, in the sense that we try really hard to do security in depth. And that means, like, if there's different aspects involved, like a secure chip or MCU, we want to make it such that a failure of any one component will not lead to a failure of the security model for the others. So even if the secure chip doesn't do what's anticipated, if there's a manufacturer backdoor in it or whatever, your coins will still be protected. And one way we do this is by requiring three different pieces of information in order to access your coins. And so that's first a secret on the secure chip. And as I mentioned, it's specifically designed to keep you know, physical protection of secrets in the chip. There's also a secret on the MCU. And there's a third secret, which is not on either thing, which is your password to use. And so all three of these pieces of information are cryptographically combined, and only then will you be able to access your coins in your wallet. And so even if someone steals your device, there's not enough information on the device to actually recreate your wallet and access your coins. And so I think this is quite, as far as I understand, quite novel and quite a special way to do it. And we think it's a good way to do it. Mm-hmm. As far as usability, on the other hand, you know, you can make something as secure as possible, but it doesn't really matter if no one's able to use it. And so we spend a lot of time trying to think of, you know, how to make things simple. And so when we created the Bitbox O2, you know, we tried to take some lessons learned from the Bitbox O1 that included simplicity. So we got really great reviews about the onboard SD, micro SD card. The point here is to make it really, really simple to do a setup and do backups. So it takes just minutes, whereas with the others, it'll take 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Can you explain the micro SD card? I think for the average user out there, why a micro SD card?
Mm-hmm. So one of the feedback we got from our reseller partners and other users was this concept of mnemonic anxiety. And so a mnemonic is the traditional way to do a backup. So a mnemonic is just a word list that represents a random number. And typically with any wallet, software wallet or hardware wallet, you have to get a list of 12 to 24 words. You write them down on a piece of paper. And then that's basically your backup. And what we did was we used a micro SD card slot onboard the device itself. And instead of forcing users to write down this word list, it's just saved instantly onto the micro SD card. And then the idea is you take the micro SD card out and you keep it somewhere safe. If you have a lot of funds, maybe you make a couple different copies and put them in different locations. And the mnemonic anxiety was from users who didn't really understand you know, what what is a mnemonic? Why am I writing words down? What do I need to do with this? And people are really scared making sure they do every word right. And when they have to re-enter the words in to verify that what they did correctly, it takes a long time. It's a lot of stress. And so we want to take all that away. That said, you know, some people trust paper a bit more than electronics, although micro SD cards are quite stable. So we also give the option to create a mnemonic word list that you can write down on paper too during the setup. Mm-hmm.
And what I like about that you mentioned, you know, since, you know, most of us are not any kind of technical experts, and we need somewhere we need to trust. I mean, it's funny because Bitcoin is about trustlessness, but you got to start somewhere. Like, okay, you got to start trusting the hardware manufacturer. But when you're saying, okay, you know, you need sort of three hardware components, as I would just call them, in order to, you know, verify the validity or whatever, the 100%, you know, confirmation thing is, is somehow, it's a comfortable thought, you know, it's relaxing. So,
Yeah. So for sure, one of our guiding principles has always been to try to minimize the need to trust anything, anyone, including us. And so requiring or the device password, which the user itself sets, is one aspect to try to let users not have to trust us. I think open source comes into play here again. So our code is all open source. Anyone can go take a look at it. We have deterministic builds, which means that an individual can build the code itself themselves, and they can verify that what we actually distribute is identical to what they built. So the code we publish is really the code on the device, and so on. But as you said, you know, it's hard to eliminate all trust. In the end, you still have to have some trust to the hardware manufacturer, because even with all this, you could still have a second chip on the device that's doing something that you don't know, a backdoor somehow, and things like that. And so we try to do everything we can to not have people trust us, including releasing like X-rays and schematics of our devices. But if any of your listeners have other ideas for things we can do, we're happy to hear also.
Right. Let me go back to, because you a couple of times you mentioned the Bitbark 01. So it is true, right? I mean, you would have potentially more attack vectors if you don't have a Bitcoin only firmware on it. Is that true?
That's true. So the Bitcoin 01 is a different hardware design. So it actually was an early one, so it didn't have a screen. That was one of the main reasons we moved on to the Bitbox 02. But as you mentioned, we have, with the Bitbox 02, we have two versions. One is the Bitcoin only version, and another is what we call multi edition. So you can have altcoins on it. You can also have second factor authentication using the FIDO U2F protocol. But the Bitcoin only version, a lot of people ask us, okay, why did you do that? Because the multi already has Bitcoin and things like that. There's a few reasons. The main one is also against security. So like you mentioned, it reduces the attack vectors. Mm-hmm. And so anytime you add new code, so altcoins need new code, U2F needs new code, you introduce different ways, different API settings and different ways that people can interact with the device that introduces potential for different attack vectors and different ways to attack the device. And so by just eliminating that, trying to keep it as minimal as possible, you automatically will wipe out a lot of those different types of attacks. And so that's why we made the Bitbox 02 Bitcoin only for added security. We had during the beta release, we also had a questionnaire asking users, you know, would they be interested in the Bitcoin only also? And we got a lot of positive feedback. Quite significant portion of users were actually interested in the Bitcoin only. which made us feel good. And also it bears out in the sales statistics also. A significant portion of people do appreciate this extra security.
Yeah, it was definitely a really good decision because I like Trezor. It's just that I've been using Trezor too, and the problem with Trezor, I think, has been, and I reported that to their team, to their security, is that first of all, they don't have a. I'm not sure by now. Does Trezor even deliver Bitcoin only hardware wallets? I'm not even sure about that. But the one I've had is that the problem has been that every time you update, you make an update, you have to do this Bitcoin only firmware again. So you need to do this extra separately after each update. So I'm not sure whether that's a bug or they just didn't think of it, but it makes it a little bit not practical in a sense. So that's why I think it's good if a company, delivers Bitcoin only hardware devices to the to their customers.
Yeah, one thing we did was a bit different to Trezor. So they have a Bitcoin only firmware, which I think is great. But what we did was we actually made a Bitcoin only wallet. And so the Bitcoin only hardware can only ever load Bitcoin only firmware. Mm-hmm. And we thought that was important. So there's different signing keys and so on that would prevent the different version from being loaded onto it. And again, this is, preventative security, I would say, such that, if any bug comes in the future by someone figuring out they could use something that was an issue with the altcoin support or the U2F support, we'd want to prevent that.
Mm-hmm. Great. So the Bitbox 02 comes, with this whole vacuum packaged, tamper-proof packaging did you ever hear from your, did you get any kind of feedback from your customers in terms of the haptic touching of it? Because I thought always I have big fingers or something but then I got used to it. After a while, I really got used to it. It was easy, really a piece of cake after that. But what's the feedback you get from your, if you can share that?
Yeah, sure. So, also, I just want to mention first, as far as user feedback, we're very, very happy to get user feedback. You can send us emails to support@shiftcrypto.ch. We also, right now on our Twitter, we have a questionnaire up, Shift Crypto HQ at Twitter. If you can go and fill that out, we'd really appreciate it. And we're very happy to hear what users say. As far as the touch buttons, the touch sliders that we have on the Bitbox 02. This is something unique for us. We don't have physical buttons. Instead, on the side of the device, there's two touch sliders on the top and the bottom. And just to explain the concept, and they can be used as a slider to scroll. They can also be used as reconfigured to be touch buttons for a touch press. For secure operations, we have a hold function, so you basically clamp it with two fingers to confirm a transaction, for example. And the feedback we got from this, mm-hmm. Somewhere there's some animated GIFs, I think.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, if you scroll down, if you put your cursor over the line drawings, I think it'll actually move.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice.
So some of the different options. Mm-hmm. And the feedback we've gotten has been overwhelmingly positive. When we first released it with the beta program, there was some calibration issues, but those are now fixed. And the feedback we get is really, really great. So some people, it's very new. It's a very unique kind of way to interact with the device. So it takes a little while to kind of grasp the concept, but you get it pretty quickly. And then once you get it, it's quite fast. And so we think we originally came up with this kind of design for flexibility, but also we think you can have some really interesting and good user experience with it. And so with respect to actually just using a hardware wallet for a hardware wallet, we think you can have much faster input. For example, the password entry, we think you can do it much faster than the others. So easier, And we think when you display information, it's a lot more quicker to grasp, simpler to use. And so this is one aspect along with the micro SD cards. We're trying really hard to focus on simplicity, and that includes, you know, we haven't even mentioned it with the software, of course, a lot of focus there, but also on the hardware level itself. We want to make mm-hmm. things very simple.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether I tested recovery from in the beginning, but mm-hmm. just to make sure, okay, so the seed phrase or the mnemonic phrase is on the micro SD card. So if I wanted to do a recovery test, I'll just take out the, you know, retrieve my whatever, my micro SD card, put it into the device, right?
Yep, exactly. And so once you reset your device or you get a new device, so the backup can be loaded on any device, so you can get an extra device if you wish. If you lose one or it gets damaged. During the setup process, it'll just give you an option, create a new wallet or load from a backup, and quite simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did test both ways, because the whole package comes with a, that's what I was going to say, with a extra, what do you call it, like adapter cable or plug-in mm-hmm. cable for the mobile phone, for the Android. So I tested both, you know, on desktop and mobile. It works really smoothly. Is there a difference when you interact with your mobile? Like, are there any potential attack vectors or security risks when you do it with your mobile? Just really plain, you know, question.
Yeah. So the whole point of a hardware wallet is, of course, keep your coin safe. But one assumption that all hardware wallet vendors make is that your computer or your mobile phone is already compromised. And so part of this threat scenario is that the hardware wallet should protect against any malware that's on your computer or your mobile phone. So in that sense, there shouldn't be a difference. Because we just automatically assume it's already hacked. And then that's why you have a screen, that's why you have touch input, things like that, so that you can verify that what you are signing, what you are doing, is really what you expect that you're doing. So in that sense, there shouldn't be a difference. And we do provide the Bitbox with different cables. So it's by default, it's a USB-C connection. So with new computers, new phones, it should plug in directly. We also have an adapter for the traditional USB-A port, and we have an extension cable also. And so we try to, again, with simplicity, we try to provide all the tools, all the accessories necessary, such that once you get the device, you can be up and running. You don't have to go order more parts to make it work with your system.
Mm-hmm. You know, on all the hardware devices, there's this option, and there's this talk about choose an additional 25th passphrase word, mm-hmm. you know, additional to the mnemonic, the 25th word, a passphrase. What would you tell the average user? Like, why should they do that? Or should they do that at all?
Yeah, so I'm always hesitant to give recommendations on best security practices, but the 25th password is an extra layer of security. So basically a second password. One of the really nice things, I think, about this 25th word, this extra passphrase, is the ability to have plausible deniability. And so what that means is, for example, let's say, there's a thief, they're standing next to you, and they have a gun pointed at your head, and they want you to open up your wallet and give them all your coins, for example. A situation that could happen more and more in the future is not a thief, but maybe a government, for example, at an airport. You get to a checkpoint. In the US, for example, there's laws where if someone asks you to give a secret to decrypt something, you have to. Otherwise, they can not let you in the country, but maybe do some other things. And so I think these scenarios are an issue, and plausible deniability means you could deny plausibly that you have coins on your device. And so the 25th word, how it works with that is you can enter any word or any random string, and it will create a completely valid wallet. And if you enter the wrong string, it'll be valid wallet, but no coin on the device. If you want to make it a little bit more plausible, you could set up a second wallet with a different password, a different 25th word, put a few coins on it, put a few transactions on it, and then have that to show to potential people, and then keep the rest of it locked away somewhere a bit more secret.
All right. So, but it's important to emphasize that one should never ever forget or lose the 25th word, right?
Yes. That's a very good point. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Probably more coins have been lost by people's brains, people's memory, than actual technical issues or actual security issues.
Yeah, it's a real paradigm shift. I think the thinking of being one's own super self-sovereign Bitcoin citizen, that it really means self-responsibility. I mean,
yes, for right. sure. Yeah.
So one feature, I think, or one really good or unique feature of the Bitbox 02 is that like even if someone had physical access to the device itself without the micro SD card, there's no way they can retrieve that, right? With highly sophisticated technologies, whatever, right?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, it doesn't have enough information on the device to actually recreate the wallet by cryptographically including the user password. But despite that also, there's, you know, this idea of security in depth. So we try to make it really hard for someone to actually extract the secrets. So they could potentially brute force the password, but they need the secrets stored in the MCU, the microcontroller, and also in the secure chip. Mm-hmm. And the secure chip has a couple of brute force prevention mechanisms. So the secret inside of there, it's generated inside the secure chip, stored inside the secure chip, should never leave the secure chip by design. And when someone would try to, for example, brute force your password, they have the device, they need to use the secure chip in order to use the secret. There's a couple of brute force prevention mechanisms included, including making it take time to make an attempt. I don't have the numbers off my head, but it'll take hundreds or thousands of years to actually brute force a rather short password. And in addition, it has a monotonic counter inside the device, which means that after about 700,000 attempts, which is a big number, so you should never run out of attempts, but it's a small number compared to the brute force space, the device itself will lock and it'll be unusable after that point. Maybe that was kind of where you're heading.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got not your coin, not your keys, not your coins, and now let's go progression level. Let's talk about like connecting, because I had some issues at the beginning. I don't know what I did wrong, or maybe I didn't follow the precise instructions. I didn't get, you know, how to connect, because I got a my node, full node, and that's a progression. So so people should learn, yeah. First of all, take the Bitcoin off the exchange, put it in a hardware wallet like Bitbox 02, and then the next step should be connecting it to an independent self-verifying, self-validating full node.
Yes.
And is there anything you want to like explain to people, like what they need to take care of when connecting your Bitbox 02 to whatever proxy or full node?
Yeah. So just taking a step back. So the reason for full nodes. Yeah, it's as you said, it's kind of the next step in the progression. taking control of your private keys, basically. So hardware wallets, they provide security, but they don't provide privacy. And so one thing a lot of new people and even experienced people don't quite grasp right away is that even if you're using a hardware wallet or a software wallet, you know, your coin balance is on the blockchain. And so you need to use some kind of software, even if you have a hardware wallet, you need to use some kind of software in order to check the blockchain to see how many coins you have. And so if you're using Ledger, Trezor, ourselves also, you have to ask the wallet to get your coin balance. And so each of us will have our own servers, our own nodes that will give you this information. But that means, I don't think any of us is doing this, but that means if we wanted, we could basically look and see your whole financial history. And that's, you know, that's kind of antithesis to what Bitcoin is. And so for 2 years now, we've offered the opportunity to connect to your own full node through our app. And so in that case, you don't have to trust any other third party to check how many coins you have for you. You can do it yourself. So we think that's quite important. That's why we did it so early. And we're continuing to improve the usability here. For example, we'll have, I think our next firmware release, our next app release, will also have improved Tor support so that you can use Tor a lot more easily to connect to your own.
Are you sure you don't have it already? Because I thought I've been using the Tor address actually of my.
So that might have been why you had a little bit of trouble. So Tor is possible. It's been possible for a long time, but there's some issues with I forget exactly, like SSL certificates, for example. And now we've kind of had a way to work around that, so you can connect to the Tor.
Exactly, and then it generates the certificate automatically, and then it checks, and then connection successful. I think that's how it works, right?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact details, but this should be a lot more streamlined, so that you can use Tor and a full node to have full privacy, and I would say one of the key components to full financial sovereignty.
Great. Yeah.
And so, and then we use the Electrum protocol, so it's very easy to connect to your own backend, like the Raspberry Bolt or Raspberry Blitz, my node, Nodal, they're all supported. And this should work even on mobile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It would just be great if, you know, for really the average user out there, that would just, you know, my node already has, you know, really beautiful guidelines and instructions to follow. And it would be nice, you know, if there was a little bit more, what do you call it, like exchange of thoughts and the communication between, you know, the hard wallets and the full node providers, and you know, so people just can step by step without going into command lines or anything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we think there's a market there also. We're something we're interested in pursuing, but at the moment we're trying to focus on hardware wallets and make sure we do that right.
Right. So I don't have any more questions. Is there anything on the roadmap share with us? Or
So I mean, we're always working. There's a lot in the pipeline. You know, in general, we're always hard at work trying to improve the user experience. I think, you know, with better onboarding, we can enable the next generation of Bitcoiners to hold their own keys. We think that's very important. Just in general, so we mentioned the mobile app on Android. That's been in beta for a while, but that's going to be coming out of beta. So we're happy about that. We're also quite interested in integrations with other other wallets, other services. Electrum, for example, we have there should be a new Electrum release coming out soon, and that will include support for the Bitbox O2. And that will also include, you can use the Bitbox O2 with multisig on that also. So we're quite excited about that. Multisig will come to our own app later down the line. Yeah, and so as far as integrations, you know, we're quite happy to you know, do more integrations. So if you think your service or wallet can benefit from hardware wallet integration, please reach out to us. We're happy to hear from you. And in general, we're going to have, for example, HWI support in probably the next release after this. So that's the hardware wallet interface being developed by Bitcoin Core contributors. And that should give automatic access to Wasabi, BTC Pay Vault, and so on. So we're quite excited about that. But like I said, if anyone also has some ideas or integrations that they're thinking about, please do contact us.
Great. Any other resources you want to direct? Like you mentioned the survey that people can fill out, or the website, or whatever you have.
Yeah, we're always happy for user feedback. We value it immensely. Like I mentioned, we have a survey, a questionnaire right now, pinned on our Twitter, at Shift Crypto HQ. And for general information, check out our website, shiftcrypto.ch, and we'll continue to update that to give you more and more information. And also from there, you can find a link to a number of blog posts we've done, which I'd say can be educational also for technical people. For example, we had some posts on the pitfalls of multisig that have been quite popular, some posts on nodes, and so on.
Fantastic. Douglas, thank you so much. And we might have some other talk maybe on Neuralink and Bitcoin in some future.
Yeah, awesome.
Alrighty. Thanks
so
much. All right.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. That was a really fascinating talk with Douglas Buckham, CEO of Shift Crypto. .ch, the makers, producers of Bitbox 02, hardware wallets, Bitbox 02, because it's a Bitcoin only firm hardware. And check them out. It's really smooth haptic, you know, interaction with the hardware device. It one feels comfortable, secure, relaxed, and you can only, you know, just make up your own opinion, do your own due diligence, read about it, share this video with others, retweet it, like it, share, subscribe, follow, and make sure you follow them on Twitter and on the website. Douglas is at Douglas Buckham, and the website is shiftcrypto.ch, and there you can find them also on Twitter. That's shiftcryptohq. Okay, so that's all about it. Hope you've enjoyed this. Let me know if you have any questions, feedback, and any other wish for a special guest. You should join me on my show, Total Bitcoin Podcast Show, or on my Total Bitcoin Connector Show. Thank you so much again for your support, for listening. I'll see you soon again.